The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition for this week. Excited to do the show today. Not sure why. Oh, I know why, because we're doing it a day earlier, so there's one less thing that I have to do tomorrow. I guess that's the source of my excitement here. So, Jim, thanks for agreeing to do it today, where we've got a little more time. So.
Yeah, you do sound very excited. I mean, I'm sure everybody noticed the change in inflection in your voice.
Plus, it's earlier in the day than we usually do it, still fresh. And we usually do this later, and it's, I don't know.
For folks who don't know Chris, that was his excited voice.
You got me there.
Because it's the first thing I noticed this morning when I came into the office. Like, my God, Chris is so excited. Because me, it is nearly impossible to tell when I get excited.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to struggle to figure that out. But you, it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah. Well, so what exciting things do you have for us today? Although, before I forget, just to give people a heads up, during Thanksgiving week, we will not have a new show, neither an EDU show nor a Q&A show that week. So, just letting people know, we'll pick back up the week after that, but we'll have, after this show airs, there'll be one more show that airs, and then there'll be a break on the Thanksgiving holiday week. So just want to give people a little warning.
No problem, and we'll throw that on Chris. He's going to go away for a week instead of staying here and working through the holidays. So because he's the only one who knows how to run the recording equipment, there's no show.
It's okay to take a break once.
I suppose I'll give you a week off. I don't know. Where are you going anyways? You said you're going away.
Yeah, we're going to try to go to Mexico.
Mexico for Thanksgiving? Mm-hmm. Do they serve turkey day down there?
I don't eat turkey usually in Mexico. But okay. Yeah, we should be back for turkey day though.
So so you're going to be back by... So. Okay, mm-hmm. All right, cool. Well, you enjoying Mexico? I'm still trying to decide if I'm going to go home to Massachusetts or not. I best decide within the next day or two or I'll never get a ticket.
True.
But per your recommendation, you did say it would probably be the best week to be out of the office. But God, I was gone for 3 weeks. I just feel I'm just trying to relax again at home without having to travel again. But anyways, we'll see. I may or may not be here the week you are gone.
Okay.
But folks, we're going to jump into this. We always lead with Social Security question, but actually I'm going to pause leading with Social Security question and reply to an email we just received. I guess, Chris, the show has already played where we announced we are pausing taking on new retirement planning and tax planning clients. That must have played because I've already received some emails on it. One person wanted a little bit of clarification. If we are still doing tax preparation or at least offering that to potential clients, yes, we are still, at least as far as I know right now, Bob's not in today, so I couldn't ask him. But I believe he said he had some room for tax prep, correct?
Yes. My understanding is he still has some room for tax prep for this coming tax season.
Right. So that will be doing your 2021 taxes. But of course, folks, Bob would be doing them in early 2022. So tax preparation, folks, is still, at least right now, we have capacity. Mm-hmm. Tax planning, that's where we get much, much, much deeper into a tax scenario, taking into account required minimum distributions and when they begin, taking into account your tax planning number, that's that 210 concept, I call it the 210 number. Is Bob going to be looking to reduce taxes for two of you? Is your aim to reduce taxes for one of you as a widow widower, or none of you? Are you looking to pass your assets on in a tax-efficient manner to beneficiaries? That's 210. So that's the analysis where Bob will help you determine your 210 number. Look at Roth conversions, look at withdrawal analysis. What accounts in retirement should you spend from and in what order? And every year they vary. One year you may take from a brokerage account and an IRA. The following year you're taking it all from an IRA. So these are the things that we do in an advanced analysis. Those have been paused because we need the data from the retirement analysis that Chris and his team do in order to put into Bob's tax planning software to get this tax projection analysis done. So both of those are paused. Tax preparation is open. Insurance services, we do offer insurance at our firm. You know that, so we won't get into that. But insurance services are still open. And, of course, our asset management services are open as well. But the other two are paused. Okay, I wanted to clarify that because we had some people get a hold of us on that. So just wanted to clear the air on that.
Sounds good.
Okay, so we always lead with Social Security question, and we have a fairly straightforward, simple-ish Social Security question, Chris, to begin with. And it starts with, hi, Jim and Chris. I'm hoping you can guide me on a Social Security question. My wife and I are in our late 50s, and I have recently retired. I am trying to understand how I can get a more accurate estimate of what my Social Security will be when I become eligible. The projections from Social Security assume I will continue earning what I earned last year until I am eligible. I know that will not be the case since I have already retired. Is there a calculator somewhere where I can change the assumptions to stop incorporating future earnings and just halt it where it now sits, meaning there will be no future earnings? Mm-hmm. I love your show and appreciate any help you can give.
Okay. He is correct that the Social Security benefit estimate statement that you look at, either you received in the mail occasionally or you go online to your online account and look at it on there, that estimate assumes that you will continue earning what you earned last year up until the point you claim. So when they give you an estimate at 62, at your full retirement age and age 70, each of those assumes you work right up until you claim, which isn't always the case. Now, let me first say that if you're fairly old, if you're fairly close to claiming or fairly close to 62 even, the benefit estimate isn't going to be skewed much for most people, given that. Even if you say, oh, I'm not going to work for another 7 or 8 years, that seems like a big difference from what they're assuming. Most of the time, that doesn't end up changing the benefit estimate noticeably. But the younger you are, that assumption, if it's different, if you're retiring in your early 50s or mid-50s even, the benefit estimate could be off a fair amount. And also, depending on your actual earnings record and what is sitting in those top 35 right now versus what might go in as replacements as you were to work more if you did, that would obviously be a case where you might notice a bigger difference between the two. That being said, it's shocking how difficult it is to find a calculator that allows you to make these adjustments. Social Security actually does offer a more advanced calculator, but I find it to be extremely difficult for people to use and even difficult to find on their website. So I think the best option, I always look for a free option first. I haven't found a good free one, though. So what I would probably recommend is you go to where the website that we actually use from the advisor side to do Social Security benefit estimates for our own clients, honestly. We just use the advisor side of it. They also have a retail side where you can buy access for a year for $40. It's maximizemysocialsecurity.com is the website. So that's all one word strung together, maximizemysocialsecurity.com. And it was a site started by Professor Kotlikoff, and he has a passion for all things related to Social Security. He's a professor of economics, actually, by training. Lawrence Kotlikoff is his name. And we find that tool to be able to handle practically any situation and gives you the complete ability to enter a future earnings record assumption rather than using the default assumption that Social Security uses. So that's a tool. It does cost money, but $40, and it isn't a one time where you run one thing and then you have nothing. It gives you access to be able to go in there and play around with different assumptions and run different estimates at different ages and different things like that for a full year for that $40. So right now, that's what I'm telling people as a recommendation. There are other paid services out there as well that'll probably do the same thing. This is not the only one, but this is one that I know will do what he's asking. And it's a pretty reasonable fee, and we use it from we use the professional side of it. But as far as what it allows you to do, that part is the same. So that's probably what I would do. If he's that interested, it's probably worth $40 to play around with it. And
absolutely,
that'd
I agree.
Be the best thing. The free Social Security tool. He'll if he hasn't lost all of his hair already, it'll contribute to hair loss as you try to use it, as you rip your hair out trying to figure out the thing. So I think it's worth $40 to keep a little extra hair.
The one thing I will say, I'll give a shout out to the other financial advisors who listen to our show. I know there's a lot of young, new ones who try to learn from us, which is great. Help with my Social Security has some of the most ugly presentation reports you're ever going to see. We don't necessarily use it for the presentation reports. When we get the advisor version, we use it for its exceptional ability to crunch Social Security.
No, it's maximizemysocialsecurity.com.
What's help with my Social Security? Oh,
that's
our blog.
Our blog is pretty good.
Our blog is pretty good, yes. The Maximize Social Security. What I will say is there are a lot of other programs, not so much you hear about anymore in our industry on the professional side, Chris. Ever since 2015 and the laws changed where you can't do file and suspend, claim now, claim all later, all those wonderful things where the software really came in handy. So a lot of the Social Security software, you don't hear about them much anymore. There are other software programs in our industry that are much more graphically beautiful. But in our opinion, we like Maximize My Social Security for its ability to crunch. It may not be pretty reports, but you can pretty much model anything. Now, Chris, you use the software all the time, but it pretty much models everything you need, right?
It's very rare. I have run across a couple of really bizarre cases that involve not straight up retirement benefits, but when there's disability or survivor benefits that they're then going to transition over to another type of benefit. I can't even off the top of my head remember what the case was, but in the last year or two, there was something I was trying to model, and I contacted them, and they admitted that, they can't quite handle that scenario. But it was a very odd situation. 99.99% of people, their situations will be perfectly fine in this system.
Perfect. All right, let's move on. This is an interesting question. Well, not interesting question, but we will address this person's question.
Well, hopefully, I think, it's interesting.
Well, it's interesting. It wasn't interesting as if we never talked about it before, but he accuses us of never talking about it before. I don't want to say accuses us. He doesn't think we ever talked about it before, but we have. Okay. So anyways, we'll answer his question. Okay. All right, it begins, "Hello, Jim, Chris, and Bob," all in caps. So he's giving a shout out to Bob, and poor Bob's not on the show. The one time we get a shout out for Bob, and he's not here. But
Bob knows he's loved.
Bob is loved. He is from the fine state of North Carolina. Not Bob, but this listener. I don't know, Bob. Is Bob a native Coloradoan? I think he's from somewhere.
He's
from the Midwest.
He is from somewhere, yes.
I don't think he's from here.
I thought it was Michigan or Wisconsin.
Yeah,
or something
I think
like
it was
that.
Somewhere out where it's mm-hmm. in the Midwest, the northern Midwest, where it's cold in the winter. Okay, anyways, this gentleman is from the fine state of North Carolina. He writes, I'm one of those folks that has lost a lot of weight by walking while listening to your awesome podcast. Oh. We get a lot of people who exercise to our podcast. Did you notice that?
I don't think they went exercising because of the podcast. I think they just were looking and searching for something they could listen to while they happened to be walking. So, and ours is a nice length, I think. A lot of the podcasts are shorter than most people would like to walk, but ours, I think, an hour to hour and a half is, I think, a nice length of time to walk in the morning.
Well, these walkers are glad that I'm not running the recording software because they'd be walking their heinies for 5 hours. They'd be like, my God, Jim, shut up. I want to get home.
We're going to do an advanced exercise podcast where Jim controls the length.
Okay. So he says, because you only do two a week, I found myself having to resort and listen to other podcasts.
Oh, we got a lot of old ones you can listen to as well.
True. You could do that. Yeah. And while doing that, a tidbit of information has come up on the other shows that I don't believe I have ever heard you guys discuss.
Now he's throwing down the gauntlet.
He is. Yeah. And then he puts in parentheses, I could have missed it, but I don't think so. Mm. So when I read what he thinks we haven't said before, interrupt me if you feel we have talked about this before. Okay. I'm not sure how far into his email now I'm going to be able to get. I didn't realize that there are RMDs on Roth 401ks.
Mm, yes, we've talked about that. Not recently. I'll give him that. If he hasn't listened for an extended period of time, this topic I don't think has come up on the show.
We talk about this an awful lot because it comes up. I know we have.
I mean, we certainly talk about it in our lives fairly frequently because this is a common thing we have to remind people about why it's generally not wise to leave your Roth 401k in that Roth 401k when you're approaching RMD age of 72 now. The classic recommendation for most people, there could be reasons not to do this, I'll admit that, but generally we encourage people to roll it out to a Roth IRA before hitting 72 so that you're not forced to drain it and give up potential future tax-free growth. That's the downside. It's not because it's taxed. It's going to come out tax-free for a qualified distribution, just like out of the Roth IRA, but it can't go back into the Roth if you take it out as a distribution. So that's the reason why if you're leaving it there, if it's still there by the time you hit RMD age, clearly you haven't used it yet. So if you want to enable that future tax-free growth, you want to keep it inside of a Roth wrapper. And the only way to do that without the forced RMDs is to move it over to the Roth IRA. So it is something that comes up regularly for people. I will side with this person that we haven't, I don't believe, in a recorded session, talked about that for quite a while.
I tend to disagree on that, but I have no idea. So let's move on to his question. But I know this is something we've talked about in the past.
Yes, right. I don't know about how recently.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you did miss it, listener. So I do. I know we talked
about
it.
Well, now we have for sure. There you go. I just gave it to you.
All right. Yeah. So he says, so when I got home from my walk that day, I Googled it, and sure enough,
yeah.
There are required minimum distributions from Roth 401ks. Of course, there are also a ton of comments about how to avoid it. Hence, my question for you fine gentlemen. Mm-hmm. When I separate from my employer, I will be 59 and a half, or actually over 59 and a half. Now I want to remove the Roth 401k and put it in a Roth IRA so I can avoid required minimum distributions. Mm-hmm. But what are the rules I will need to know about? And then he lists a couple of questions. Will the various five-year rules about Roth accounts come into play here? If I move the Roth 401k to a new Roth, a new, and he put new in all caps, he has existing Roth IRA. But he says, if I move it to a new, all cap, Roth IRA, will the funds be considered seasoned if they were 5 years old or older in my Roth 401k? Or will this be reason enough to move my Roth 401k into my existing Roth IRA? Are there any other factors about this move I should know about? So let's back up and address his three questions there. His first part, folks, he was wondering if any of the five-year rules will affect what he's trying to do. So let's just back up and get everyone to understand there are 2 5-year rules when it comes to Roth accounts. And people confuse these all the time. The first 5-year rule is kind of straightforward. In order to get a qualified distribution from a Roth IRA, which is the tax-free distribution on all the monies in your Roth, contributions and growth, in order to get a qualified distribution, you have to meet 2 elements. 1, you have to be over the age of 59 and a half. 2, you need to have a Roth IRA that's at least 5 years old. Chris, why don't you explain a little bit about how easy that 5-year rule to reach is, how you don't even have to put money into a Roth.
Right. So you just have to be a participant essentially in the Roth idea by opening up a Roth IRA. That starts that first 5-year clock that Jim's talking about. And it isn't even 5 calendar years. It can be a little bit less than that. So at any time, say in 2021, if you were to open a Roth for the first time, you get credit for that whole year, essentially. So you might have less than 5 elapsed years, technically, from anniversary to anniversary. So keep that in mind.
You can have a lot less, Chris. You can open it on December 31st of 2021. That's now. Mm-hmm. And January 1st of 2022, it's already considered 2 years old.
Right. So there's that timing issue. So that makes it a little bit easier to reach the 5 years. And the fact that triggering that then gives you coverage for all Roth IRAs you might ever have. Because remember, the IRS believes that your IRA, you have one big IRA. It doesn't matter that you have one account with a specific account number at one custodian and another account at another custodian, or even multiple accounts at the same custodian. If for some reason you set it up that way, sounds like he's considering that, trying to keep the Roth 401k money rolled over into its own separate Roth IRA. But the beautiful thing is that for that 5-year clock we're talking about here applies to all of your Roth IRAs. The only time this is going to be a new one in the eyes of the IRS for the 5-year rule is if you never had one until you go about doing this rollover. But he already has a Roth IRA, so he started his 5-year clock for this a long time ago.
Correct. So, and just to show again that 5 years isn't really 5 years here, you opened yours on December 31st in my hypothetical example. The very next day, it's January 1st of the following year, it's 2 years old. So if you opened it in 2021, Chris, on December 31st of 2021, 5 years later, it's 2026. You don't have to wait to December 31st of 2026. January 1st of 2026, you satisfied it.
So 4 years in a day.
So it really was, I think it was be closer to 3 years in a day, because that first year and that last year are just a day old. And it's only the 3 years in between. So it's really a 3-year and 2-day hold if you had your timing right.
I don't know that people time it like that usually.
No, but I'm just saying, theoretically, it's possible. It won't even take 5 years if you did your timing right. And folks, for all you listeners out there who might be saying, oh, darn it, I have a Roth 401k like this guy, but I don't have a Roth anymore. But I opened one in 98 when they first came about, but I closed it in 2000. That doesn't matter, folks.
Right.
They consider you to be in the Roth IRA program once you open a Roth. You need not put any money into it, and you can actually close it.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't stop the clock.
5 years from when you opened it, you are satisfied. So you theoretically, Chris, could not even have a Roth right now and have satisfied the 5 years if you can show and prove, if you're ever audited, which most likely you never would be on this, but if you ever were, just be able to prove, yes, here, I got proof to you. I opened up a Roth in 1998. Okay, no problem. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Okay, so back to his question. Will he need, or are these 5-year rules going to come into play? It might, listener, depending on how old your existing Roth is. And keep in mind, it's only on growth. The money you contribute can come out of a Roth at any time for any reason, no taxes, no penalties. Keep that in mind. Only the growth. To have a qualified distribution on the growth in a Roth, qualified meaning it's not going to be taxed, it's tax-free. You have to be over the age of 59 and a half, which you've already said you will be, and your Roth has to be 5 years old. You satisfy both of those, the growth can come out tax-free. The other 10%, excuse me, the other five-year rule that screws people with Roths is on conversions. You are not doing a conversion. You're right. Moving a Roth 401k to a Roth IRA. That's not a conversion. But on a conversion, if you were moving a 401k to a Roth or an IRA to a Roth, the IRS makes you wait 5 years before you remove the converted amount, just the converted amount alone, to avoid a 10% penalty. However, after 59 and a half, which you've said you will be past, that five-year rule just goes away because there is no 10% early withdrawal penalty. And it's not really a penalty, folks. It's actually an early withdrawal tax. But everybody calls it a penalty. That penalty goes away once you reach 59 and a half.
Right.
What they're trying to do there, they were smart when they wrote this. Politicians are dumb, but they're not stupid. So what they were trying to do when they wrote this was, wait a minute, if we say, and they do, you can take money you put into a Roth, your money you put in can come out at any time, any reason, no taxes, no penalties. If people have an IRA and they're under 59 and a half, if they took money out of it, they'd have to pay a 10% early withdrawal penalty. Mm-hmm. But if they moved it as a conversion to a Roth and then took it out, there'd be no 10% early withdrawal penalty because money they put in can come out at any time, any reason, no taxes, no penalties. Right. So they said, wait a minute, we're going to ixnay that.
Right. They closed the loophole before people could use it.
Could even use it because mm-hmm. if not, someone would have done it.
Yeah.
So they wanted to keep people from converting an IRA to a Roth and then taking the money out under age 59 and a half to avoid the penalty. So they simply put a rule in there, you got to wait 5 years. So in your case, listener, the five-year rules are not, I don't think, going to impact you. But let's just add a little twist to give some clarity. Let's say he didn't have a Roth, Chris.
Right.
And he never participated in them in the past.
Right. So he just has this Roth 401k right now, that's it.
Right. And let's just say the Roth 401k is more than 5 years old and he has $100,000 in it. I'm totally making this up, folks. I don't know how much he has in his Roth 401k. He's over 59 and a half, which he already said he was, but he doesn't have an existing Roth. Let's say of that $100,000 he has in his Roth 401k, Chris, $50,000 is contributions, $50,000 is growth. Now, you know, folks, contributions can come out at any time, any reason, no taxes, no penalties. So he moves the $100,000 to a brand new Roth IRA because he doesn't have one. He's over 59 and a half, so there's no 10% early withdrawal penalties. Most people are going to be sitting there saying, well, he can get $50,000 out without taxes, without penalties, and distributions from Roths always follow this ordering. Contributions first, conversion second, growth third. There's no conversion here. He's going Roth to Roth. So most people, Chris, are going to say the $50,000 can come out tax-free and penalty-free. The $50,000 of growth needs to stay in there for 5 years before he can take it out. That's not true.
Right.
Because, as he used the word, and I like it, it's seasoned.
Uh-huh.
When you move a Roth 401k, if it is qualified, if it qualifies for qualification, that's a good way of putting it. In right. other words, it's been in the Roth 401k for at least 5 years, and you are over the age of 59 and a half, it's seasoned, Chris.
Uh-huh. It doesn't lose the seasoning as it transfers out to the
Correct.
Roth IRA. Uh-huh.
So even if you don't have an existing Roth IRA and you move your Roth 401k, which by time you do, you're probably going to be over 59 and a half, and it probably uh-huh. will be 5 years old, but there could be hundreds of thousands in there of contributions and growth.
Uh-huh.
No problem. The seasoned. So in this description I just gave, the 100,000 would move over to a brand new Roth IRA, and it hasn't lost its seasoning. That 100,000 can come out first, 100% tax free. Now, if that 100,000 over the next 3 years grew to 110,000, he still has 2 years to go before he gets 5 years. But the 100,000 of seasoned 401k money can come out. The 10,000 of growth has to stay in 2 more years.
Right. So for most people, it's not going to be an issue, since it's that only that last part, the growth part, that ultimately could be susceptible to the 5-year rule if you're starting a Roth IRA fresh at the time of the rollover from the Roth 401k. But practically, that almost never affects people, because the chance that they're going to eat away all of that and finally get to earnings before the 5-year period happened, it could happen. So we need to make people aware that it could be, you know, exposed to that. But for most people, it's not going to be an issue.
And that answers his second question. He says, if he moved it to a new Roth IRA, not his existing one, would they still be considered seasoned? Yes, for the two reasons we gave earlier. If you have a Roth that's 5 years old, all your Roths are 5 years old.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about each individual Roth being 5 years old. And as I just said, if you didn't have a Roth that's 5 years old, and we know you do because you told us, but if you didn't, that 401k money would still be quote unquote seasoned, just the growth wouldn't be.
Right.
New growth after it moves to the Roth IRA.
Right.
And then his last question was, I'm going to wrap this up. I think that was it. I thought there were two questions, though.
No, I think,
or is this reason enough to move into existing? Are there any effect? No, I think we answered
it. He was talking about needing to move it over to his existing so it would be seasoned. He doesn't have to worry about that.
Right.
So his original plan to move the Roth 401k into a, quote, new Roth, it's really a new account under his existing Roth structure, think of it as that, he can feel free to do that. He doesn't have to worry about doing that to get the extra seasoning that his existing Roth IRA has. That's not an issue in this particular case. So,
all righty, that was good on that question. Let's jump into the third question. I wonder if we're going to hit 8 today. That's a record.
No.
Okay. Yes. All right, folks, sorry, we're not going to hit 8.
We'll burst that bubble right now.
I'm trying. This one is actually I could turn this one into an EDU show, but we will definitely try not to, so we can get into more questions. But it's definitely a question we speak about, or have spoken about, and it ties into a lot about our philosophy. So it begins, hello, Jim, Chris, and another one to Bob. Another shout out to Bob.
Excellent.
Damn, Bob's not on the show and he gets these shout outs.
I'll make sure he listens. So he.
This gentleman gave his real name, but put in parentheses George. So everybody knows the little game we play, George. And he's from the fine state of Florida. He says, love your show. I have a few questions regarding your fun money concept. Once you know the amount, why don't you just quickly, you do it because I'll take 30 minutes. Explain to people who don't know what we mean by fun money and what he means by fun money.
So what we usually refer to it as the fun number, but it's representing the same thing. So let me define for you what that is. The fun number to us represents the pool of money that you've saved that can be considered purely discretionary, meaning you can spend it on whatever you want, as you wish, as fast as you want, because those things that you've prioritized above having fun or other discretionary spending, I say other, could you, because when you have leftover money, it could be given away to kids or others or something like that. So, but once you've prioritized everything else that you would like to and dealt with those financially, what's left, you can just go and do with what you please. And we refer to that as your fun number, kind of playfully, but it's the pool of money that's left over after we have addressed things like the minimum dignity floor, aging-related expenses and long-term care, any kind of guaranteed inheritance, any other priority items you might list that you want to protect before you spend the rest of the money on fun or give it away or whatever you're going to do with it at your discretion. So that's the concept of this thing we call the fun number, or he's calling fun money.
Perfect. So he asks two simple questions that, again, we could stretch into an EDU, but we won't today. We'll give briefer answers. He says, how do you break out the percent of money, though, in my fund money to spend on go-go, slow-go, and no-go years? Personally, I'm thinking to spend 65% in go-go, 30% in slow-go, and 5% in my no-go. Because longevity runs in my family, I'm thinking 15 years on go-go, 10 years on slow-go, and 5 years on no-go. Before I get to the next question, let's look at a little bit of what he's saying there. And I'm going to let Chris actually do a lot of the talking here because he does this part in the firm. But since this whole concept is something that I, with Chris's help, kind of created and envisioned, to me, the vast majority of money that you have, that's truly the fund money, and fund money or fund numbers, what we call it, as Chris rightfully pointed out, isn't just necessarily money you're going to spend on totally discretionary fun stuff. For me, it would be hiking, fishing, camping, all these things that I like to do as long as I can. Everybody's got different things they want to do. Chris is right. It could also be giving money away to children. A lot of people struggle on that, Chris, and instead their children inherit money only when they die, and they never get to watch the enjoyment that their kids can do with it or their grandkids. So I agree with you. That can be part of your fun pool. Once you come up with the fun number, Chris is also correct when he said, this is money that can be spent as fast as you want. This is the concept that I was trying to do because I see all the time, sadly, clients of ours pass away far sooner than they ever thought, or clients of us suffering medical issues far sooner than they ever thought that prevent them, they may not kill them, but prevents them from doing a lot of the fun they wanted to do. And I thought there's got to be a better way to do retirement planning than limiting someone to a silly 4, 5, 6% quote-unquote safe withdrawal rate. Why should you have to limit your discretionary fun? You don't know how much time you're going to have to do it. Why not instead get a budget? This is your fun budget. Spend it as fast or as slow as you want on anything that is outside of the realm that Chris just described, anything that you haven't prioritized. So that's the concept. I personally feel you should spend most of it during the go-go years, which to us are generally the first third of your retirement. It can vary based on your health. This gentleman says he has longevity, but it can vary based on health. It can be a shorter period, longer period. It's fluid. And so all I want to say is it's fluid on that. So we have to look at it all the time. We have to look at it as you progress through retirement every year and see. You may enter retirement, listener, thinking your go-go period is going to be 15 years. 3 years into retirement, something might happen, and now your go-go phase might be 1 or 2 more years. Or you might have, and it's usually always medically driven, something else may happen to a spouse or a child of yours. And a lot of the money that's in the discretionary pool needs to be used for something else. Well, it's got to come from the discretionary pool, which is the fund number. And because you now have other obligations, your fund number is dropping and it may not be as big as you thought. So you do have to look at this and monitor it all the time. Chris, I'm going to let you answer how you work with clients to figure out how much to spend and how do you do that? How do you deal with it? How do you figure out how long it is? He's got 15, 10, and 5. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things you counsel? And it's different for everyone. Mm-hmm. But,
yeah, and that's key, that everyone has a different situation, different views on longevity, different views on how active they'll be as they progress through retirement, what their retirement age is, which will determine somewhat their, like he's talking about a 15-year go-go period, which is a little on the long side, longer than average. That would imply maybe retiring at 60 and having a go-go period until 75, something like that. I don't know what his ages are. They might be a bit different. But 15 years is on the long end, not the longest go-go period I've ever seen, but on the long end of it, I'd say most people are in the 7 to 10-year category, depending on the age at which they retire. But the most successful ways, and I've done this a lot with people, and honestly, I've probably done this many, many times and talked through variations on this with people that Jim probably doesn't even know about. I mean, he knows I talk to people, but I don't debrief him on exactly how the fun number conversation went with every single person. And it does vary quite a lot from person to person or couple to couple. And the most successful way I've seen at deploying this idea, this concept that we have called the fun number, is to work it in reverse. I find it's too daunting to still, you know, the whole point of it was to whittle things down so people now have a manageable number that's focused on just discretionary spending instead of the overwhelming task of trying to budget everything. That's when people get overwhelmed and they can't do it. And that's how we structurally or strategically walk them through the foundational elements of the minimum dignity floor and all that. So now we've whittled that away and simplified their budgeting to just the fun number itself. But then when they're still looking at a 30-year period, maybe, of budgeting that out, they still are overwhelmed with, gee, how much should I do this year and that year and so forth. So I think it's most successful if you work it backwards. In other words, have a conversation with your significant other, if you have one, about how much do you want to carve off for the no-go period. And I think he's right on track with this 5 to 10% range. Might seem like a little tiny amount and like you're shorting the older you. But think about that. That no-go period is probably 20 years out. If it happens at all, even if you're around and wanting to do stuff, I will say that most people consider their no-go period to start somewhere in their mid-80s. Look around and talk to the people that you know that are in their mid-80s or early 90s, and you'll find that the type of fun they tend to have doesn't tend to be very expensive. They're not there. There's always exceptions, of course, but generally they're having fun, but it's mostly social interactions with people close to them, friends that they've got and that are fairly nearby. They're not doing a lot of expensive international travel and that sort of thing. So the portion of your total fun number needed for the no-go can be quite small for that reason. And the fact that you don't need it for maybe 20 plus years. So it's got time to sit in the background and grow, contributing to what pool will actually be available for the no-go you when you get there. So
if I can interrupt you right there, because Chris does a lot of the planning, my assistants, we do a lot of the investment management. We do exactly what Chris said. When we are told after we get the results from Chris's team and we're working with a client whose assets we also happen to be managing, and we break, Chris, that pool into the slow-go and no-go pool of fun, we invest that quite aggressively. We have to match the risk tolerance, the emotional risk that the clients have. But from a risk capacity standpoint, folks, if this money isn't going to be needed, at least right now, again, this is monitored constantly and is fluid and may change. But if we expect this money to be needed, in his example, 25 years from now, we would encourage our clients, if they can handle it from a risk tolerance standpoint, to maybe invest that moderately aggressive to aggressive. Mm-hmm. And you only need to match the inflationary pressures being exerted upon leisure expenses, which generally go up at rates of inflation lower than general inflation. Now, we're in an anomaly period right now where inflation is getting quite high again. But generally speaking, people in their mid to late 80s and 90s, as Chris said, they're not spending a lot of money on things that are going up really fast. So it works perfect, Chris. You can put a smaller amount aside. That's all I want to say.
Mm-hmm. So when he mentioned his kind of breakdown was about 5%, that's in the range that I would usually recommend people consider. I'm usually in that 5 to 10 category, but explain why it's such a small amount by what I said moments ago. Then we get to the slow go. So we're working backwards. We go to the slow go period and we remind ourselves that's probably a 10-year period and we're after the go-go. So things have, quote, slowed down. 30%, which he's got, I believe is a little high. I'm usually in the 10 to 20% category as a recommendation here, because again, it's a ways off, particularly for someone like this who admits that their slow-go period, they don't anticipate starting for 15 years. That means this pool of money that you're going to be using for fun is going to sit there in the background not doing anything for 15 years. So it has a potential for growth still over that time period. The closer you get to needing it, you lose the ability to pursue growth if you want to protect it. But 15 years is still a fairly long period of time, and it's for a, you know, one 10-year chunk here. So everyone's different, and some people believe their slow go will be more active than other people's slow go. So you have to assess what your intentions are. But I think 10 to 20% there is a little bit more important or appropriate, particularly when you've got 15 years before you hit it. If you were closer, if this was a person with a more typical 7 to 10 year go-go period, now that slow go period is a little bit closer. Potential for growth is lower. So that might, you know, skew it to be a little bit higher in that case than in this case. So I think his 30 definitely, in my personal opinion, is a little on the high side, unless he plans to have a pretty darn active slow-go period. So if you do my math, that usually ends up with the go-go period being about 65 to 75% of your, sometimes maybe as high as 80, I've never seen it over that, but somewhere in that range as far as what's available for the go-go period. But something I haven't probably talked to Jim about, so this will come as news to him, when people have an extended go-go period like this, through interactions with them and talking about it and talking to people who are in the midst of their go-go period, I think there's even this opportunity for when it's extended like this to create a fourth period. I call it the hyper-go period, the first maybe 5 years of the go-go period. 15 years is a long time to put the pedal to the metal. And 15 years is a long time to assume that you're going to be healthy enough to do every active thing that you want to do. So what I've been recommending to people is to not sprinkle that remaining 75% evenly over those 15 years, because I think they should do their big ticket, most important things that they want to absolutely do, bucket list items in that first 5 year period that I call the hyper go period. So I'd recommend even slicing it again for someone who's got a 15 year go go period and not consider that all one even period year to year for a decade and a half. I don't think I've ever mentioned to you this idea of the hyper go period.
No, this is like the cinnamon babka and the chocolate babka from Seinfeld.
Yeah, so I don't, you know, this is an atypically long go-go period. I don't know if I'd have to think about it to put percentages on it, but the most typical, again, is that 7 to 10-year period, and that comes from the fact that a lot of people retire in their mid-60s, 65 to 67, which if we are imagining the go-go period lasting to 75 or so, that's where that, you know, 7 to 10-year period comes from. But there's a lot of people who do retire at 62 or 60 and can have these extended go-go periods. And I'm a big fan of considering that hyper-go kind of sub-category of the go-go period in the first handful of years, and you check off those really big-ticket items that you just dreamed about that then you're sure you get them done. You're you know, pretty sure they're going to happen before you degrade to the point or get sick of doing it. You can exhaust yourself with a 15-year go-go period, and you'll have the memories, and you're sure to get those done while you still can, which is the basic concept of the go-go period anyway, but this kind of takes it to the next level.
Well, it's the basic concept of a fun number. Mm-hmm. We don't feel people should restrict their fun spending to some quote-unquote safe withdrawal rate. We don't want you to... Your fun money need not last. Your other monies have to. Your minimum dignity for guaranteed inheritance, because it's guaranteed, aging assistance, things like that. But money that's earmarked to fun, we want you to spend it.
Right.
And again, sadly, we see it. We work with only retirees or pre-retirees. We see people getting diagnosed with health issues. Look at me myself having a stroke last year. could have ended horribly. It didn't, thankfully. Things happen out of the blue. That's why we want to come up with a fun number and have you spend it. There's no right or wrong answer. Ultimately, Chris gave guidelines, but it's up to whatever makes you feel good. There's no right. There's no wrong. Right. And just because you have money in the slow go and no go, you spend all your go-go fun. There's no rule that says, oh, I said I was going to make this last 15. I spent it in 13. I can't do anything for two more years. No. You make, just take the other money.
You make decisions for yourself. Exactly. And if you prioritize doing it then, that just, yes, you can only spend a dollar once. But this isn't something, and I think people get the false impression a lot of times that when you put together a retirement plan or projection at 62 or 60 or something like that, now this is the carved in stone plan and you must follow this. No, it's just an outline guide so that you've got some parameters to work within so that you can make more intelligent decisions as you go. But your retirement is a living, breathing thing that evolves. And don't try to walk it, you know, step by step, exactly as the original plan might have laid out. It's just a guideline, essentially, that hopefully helps you head down the right path. But there's a leave yourself a lot of flexibility. Give yourself permission to be flexible as things go.
Absolutely. And other monies, you may put aside $500,000 for aging assistance reserve. You need to earn about 4% on that to keep pace with the average increase in LTC expenses. Now, you should drill that down to what area of the country you're going to live in, but generally speaking, it's about 4%. Some areas like California and Alaska, of all places, are very high. In Kansas, it's not much at all, relatively speaking. But the point is, folks, if you put $500,000 aside at age 62 and now you're 72, and you still look, I want to protect 5 years of spending, and let's say your $500,000 grew to $750,000, again, making these numbers up, but the cost is really only going to be $625,000, again, making these numbers up. What we're saying is even some money that was earmarked for aging, it's available. Doesn't mean you're going to go blow it, but it's like, wow, wait a minute, I could take from this if I wanted to. Or you can improve your aging reserve, or you can give some of that money away. In other words, I like how Chris said it, be flexible, and this needs to be monitored constantly. The plan, everybody who thinks the retirement plan was the initial assessment, what we call the data crunching phase, where we collect data and crunch it, that's not the plan, truly. It gives us the baseline of what we think we're going to do, but the plan is the ongoing monitoring, implementation, and reacting to the variability of life. Yeah. Okay.
And you are exactly right that this could easily become an EDU show or series. I've got 1,000 things in my mind that I'm holding back about
and
this.
That's why I want to stop because he and I can keep going. And I'm actually going to turn this into an EDU show.
Okay.
And the second part of your listener question was, how do we take into account the return that money is going to earn and future inflation? We'll talk. I think we kind of covered some of that already. I'm not going to get any deeper into this, but I'm actually going to put this question off to the side and also turn it into an EDU.
Okay.
Because we do deal with this constantly. This is a concept that I developed, Chris agrees with, and has helped me with it. And it's to help overcome the emotional burden of retirement where people, all you do-it-yourselfers, you don't want to spend your damn money. But following our step and our process, we want to be able to show you, look, you can comfortably, confidently, safely, at least right now, we know things are going to change, so this is going to be monitored all the time, but right now, yes, out of your $3,857,000 can be spent on discretionary, go spend it, go have fun, don't limit yourself. So that's why we came up with it. It's to deal with the emotional risk of retirement, and we'll cover that on a future show. Okay. All right. So let's get into some other things. This is a real short one. Nope, it's short for a reason, but I'm not going to answer it. we'll reach out to them personally on that. Okay, how about... This one's a good one. Mm-hmm. Okay. Came in a while ago, about about 3 months ago now. It says, hi, Jim and Chris, and sometimes Bob. Whoa. Bob is getting shout-outs constantly.
We must have said something made Bob feel lonely or something, or Bob sound like he was lonely for not getting shout-outs.
Or it's random that I'm picking a bunch of emails today that acknowledge Bob. Yeah. This gentleman gave his real name. We're going to call him George. He's from the fine state of Alabama. So I'm going to get this right. He's a Crimson Tide.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Crimson Tide. That's what Alabama is.
Yeah.
I said
you nailed it.
I nailed it.
Was a little messy.
Don't even get me going on last time. I practiced crimson, and I blurred out red tide. It's because I grew up in Massachusetts, and the red tide comes in, and then you can't go harvest clams and mussels.
Yeah, I totally get it.
Okay. I know you guys specialize in retirement planning, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this. My wife and I have three children, a junior in high school, a freshman in high school, and a fifth grader. Mm-hmm. Since the children were born, we have saved money in educational savings accounts and 529 savings plans for their college expenses. Each child's money is with Vanguard in the total stock market index. Mm-hmm. At what age for the child would you recommend moving the investment to cash, and how would you begin doing it? For example, would you recommend moving everything all at once just before college begins, or would you recommend moving 1 year's worth of expenses at a time? He is correct. We do not do 529s, educational savings accounts at our firm. We don't specialize in we do specialize in retirement planning. We don't specialize in college planning. But when I read this, I just thought maybe he's reading a little too much into this. And I just want to give him some ideas that he might want to consider, especially for the fifth grader, because the children are spread out. There's a junior in high school, so they're going to be a senior next year. Mm-hmm. He sent this question in 2021. So next year, they're going to be a senior. They're about a year and a half, 2 years tops from needing it. Mm-hmm. If you came to me and said, hey, Jim, I'm going to buy a house in a year and a half, maybe 2 years, and I got everything invested in Vanguard Total Stock Market Fund, what do you think of that? I would tell you you're a little crazy because you don't have much time. So I would look initially at where the market is. Well, market's reaching all-time highs all the time. Hasn't truly corrected. A real correction. We've had these mini corrections that passed the bear market definition because they dropped more than 20%, but they've lasted 3, 4, 5 weeks in some cases, a couple of months in another case. But we really haven't had a correction in 12 years. We're approaching very high inflation period right now. Nobody knows if it's transitory or long-term. Inflation can kill equities at least temporarily before they come back. And you have a person who might need the money in a year and a half or 2 years. Mm-hmm. I think the money in the total stock market fund for that child is a little risky. Now you're asking, should you move it all out or some of it? I don't know what your child is doing for college. I don't know if there's going to be any scholarships. I don't know if he's going to a 2-year or a 4-year, or if he's going to study to be a doctor and needs grad school. So that's, again, something that you're going to have to figure out on your own. Then you have a freshman who is probably 4 or 5 years from needing the money, and a fifth grader that, goodness, is over 10 plus years from needing the money. You might want to look, especially for the fifth grader, on letting Vanguard do this all for you. At least for the fifth grader.
That's only 7 years, though.
Oh, just, 7 years. But yeah. What I'm getting at is some 529 accounts, I don't know Alabama's, Colorado's, has a broker-sold one and a non-broker-sold one that mm-hmm. a do-it-yourselfer can do. Now, I don't know if you receive special state income tax benefits on the 529 you have, and you will lose those benefits if you invest in another state's 529. Some states will honor other states' 529s for the tax benefits. Some states will not. But I do know Colorado's non-broker, not the broker-sold one, the do-it-yourself one. And I think Colorado's website is... Can you check this? I think it's savingforcollege.org. I think that is Colorado's. But Colorado's is overseen, the do-it-yourself one is overseen by Vanguard. And Vanguard offers an investment option geared to exactly what you're doing, and they'll do it automatically. It'll be an age-based portfolio. They will manage it using Vanguard. I think they use Vanguard ETFs, but they will, they being Vanguard, have designed this that it moves automatically as the child gets older. Very similar, but on a different level, if you will, than the target date funds in 401ks, where you choose the year you're going to retire. So they will automatically begin to move it, and you won't have to worry. They show you exactly how much is going to be in cash, which is truly the safest, how much will be in short-term bonds, how much will be in intermediate bonds, and what they're going to leave, if any, in equities at all the different ages. And Vanguard can do it through the Colorado 529, and I'm sure other states have similar programs by other providers, not just Colorado's. I don't do this for a living. I don't specialize in this. There could be better ideas, but I think the freshman, excuse me, the junior, if it's totally in the stock market, you got to start looking at that a little differently based on when the child is going to need it. The fifth grader has more time. The freshman has obviously less time, but that's my initial thoughts. Maybe not what he's hoping for, but there are 529 plans, and maybe the 529 you're in has this option and you didn't know it, where they will allow you to choose these age-based portfolios, and they actually show you the breakdown of what they're going to do at each age band. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's good advice to look into. The other thing I would again, I don't specialize in education planning, even though I am an educator. I'm on the side that you pay the money to, right? So I'm at the university itself. But what I would generally ask if someone walked up to me on the street and asked me these types of questions is, first of all, how much is in the 529 versus what you're going to have to pay out, especially for that junior? If due to market performance that's been quite strong over the past decade or so, and your contributions, if there's plenty of money now in that 529 to fund them, why are you messing around? Why are you making it more complicated? You've achieved the goal, which is to pay for the college for the student. Maybe that's not the case, though. And what I'm saying by that is don't play around with risk now at all. Lock that sucker in and just say, we nailed it. You know, we hit it out of the park. We've got plenty of money for them. If there's, you know, you're trying to squeeze every dollar out, that's where some level of risk might still be possible and appropriate, because maybe you've got some additional returns you can make, and that would help out because you don't have amassed enough in there yet to cover everything. So extra growth would really help you out and minimize or reduce the amount that your child has to borrow to make up the difference, which is always a good thing to do. Try to minimize that so that they leave school with the least amount of burden possible. But it kind of depends on where they're at, I think. I think generally, I'm totally on board with what Jim's talking about. If you're that close, being fully funded in equities like that is a scary proposition. You're on the verge of fumbling the ball on the 5-yard line kind of a situation if something happens before they go. And what you don't want to do is be in a position to undermine their ability to go, especially if you've achieved the goal substantially already. Don't screw it up now at the end. So, but I think it depends a little bit ultimately what's best, how much is in these things versus how much is going to be paid out at the institution. Hopefully the junior has now identified where they're going to go and you have a pretty good grasp of what it's going to cost. And then, you know, the bottom line is you don't want the market to under, if the market is going to take away your ability for your child to go to college, you're too aggressive. If the market performance isn't going to affect that, while it'd be, you know, nice to get the returns, but if it drops by 30 or 40%, your kid's still going to be able to go to college just fine. If you're in that position, you could maybe view it differently. And that's where it's going to be a specific decision to you. And you need to mull these things over and decide. But don't just blindly forge ahead. I think you're asking the right question. Should you be invested like this? Probably not. But where you go from here, I think it depends on the answers to a few other questions. So okay. That's all I'd say.
Perfect. Again, neither Chris or I specialize in this. We're just giving you some general ideas. You may want to talk to, especially before you start moving 529s around, talk to your tax person or a specialists. There are advisors who specialize in education planning. But I do know Vanguard does offer that type of option on their do-it-yourself plan sold through the state of Colorado, and other states, I'm sure, have very similar things to help parents like you alleviate those decisions. It's just done automatically.
Yeah. Well, that's going to have to wrap it up for us.
Oh, today. That's it for today?
That's it for today. So,
all righty. Well, that's it then for a whole week, right?
Well, just 1 week. We've got one more show, and then we're going to take the break. Then there'll be a two-week gap between shows. But, yeah, we've got one more that we're going to do before the Thanksgiving holiday, and then we'll pick up right after that. So we'll be back again in 1 week with a few more questions.
Perfect. All righty.
So we want to thank everybody for listening to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition. If you want to send in your own questions, please do. Either go to the website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or you, there's a contact form on there you can fill out, send in questions or comments. You can also send an email directly to jim@jimhelps.com. We'll get you to the person who collects those questions, which is Jim. And yeah. Thanks, Jim, for joining me, and we'll be back next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.